All right, folks, sit back, relax, get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. Geocaching Podcast can be coming at you, I'd say right about now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 446, recorded live here on April 13th, 2016. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with...
Darrell W4 and...
And Taz427.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE, and also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter, and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our Patreon logo on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Wow, good stuff. We got an ace in the hole filler, folks. That's what we've got. We've got a special guest. You may have heard of him once or twice on the Geocaching Podcast in the past. We got Darrell W. Four on. How you doing, Darrell?
I'm doing pretty well. I even made it out for a cache before tonight's show.
Oh, man, excellent. I actually got to go out and do some myself today, so that was awesome.
I noticed my phone was blowing up with those notifications.
We had some good stuff I wanted to make, and I can start ribbing Darrell right off the bat. For the fine folks in Michigan and some of the northern states who literally had another snowstorm come through this last week, we're sorry. I honestly feel very sorry for your folks. So it was important to me to go out and show springtime with this nice scenic pond and the turtles going around. It was quite nice.
Well, I'm kind of jealous now, but in a few months when you're like at 120 degrees, that's
when we're having turtle soup, that's when it's really good. I'm telling you. It was awesome. So, yeah, I actually went out and got about a half dozen geocaches out today, and it was nice. It was in the 60s. The sun was out. It was pleasant. So good time to get out and actually start doing what we talk about. So go figure. Darrell, how about yourself?
Well, mine this evening, I actually tried for one before the one that I actually did. There was a multi-cache that I tried not far from downtown Royal Oak, where we did dinner tonight. Found stage one, get to stage two, which isn't very far, and realized that the sign that it probably should have been on was replaced, I'd say, within the last 6 months.
Yeah, that makes it difficult.
No logs since, I think it was summer of last year.
Oh, bad sign. Bad sign.
Yeah, bad sign. So we abandoned that one, and we hit another one. And this one I actually did Periscope on, but it's a glass jar cache.
Really?
And to make it worse, it's like a food container.
Oh, lovely.
So it's like, oh, how many ways can you go wrong? So we were shaming them on the Periscope. Come on. It's a glass jar.
Yes.
From olives that you can still smell the olives.
Oh. Yeah, we had one out here years ago and did the classic with the hiking stick in the middle of autumn. And it's like, and yeah, we replaced the container. Glass jars do not mix.
We had one that was a peanut jar, glass pink peanut jar, and it's like, yeah, someone has peanut allergies or kind of screwed with this cache because you can still smell the peanut aroma.
Yeah. Or make a favorite hockey puck for raccoons and any other wildlife that likes peanuts.
Yeah, and I've heard a number of people say, you know, you can use this bleach and water solution, soak it for a couple of days. Then you have to use this other thing, and that will strip the odors out finally. It's like, You know, it doesn't seem worth it.
Lock and Lockbox, $3. Go.
Yeah, well, and there's so many good, cheap containers that I've seen that I just don't want to take the risk.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And like I said, hiking poles and the rest of it, it's just too easy to break.
Yeah.
That metal hit and glass does not work well. Mm-hmm. I did have one thing real quick note that, and I periscoped this as well. For the first time in a long time, when I went to find a geocache today, I'm looking, and when I'm using the geocaching app, it says it's literally in the middle of a baseball field, right smack in the middle of a baseball field. And I'm like, you can't get into this. This was at a public park. The fields are actually locked when they're not in use, that kind of thing. I'm like, this just isn't right. What's going on with this? And I had to scroll back about 2 or 3 weeks worth of time, and the reviewer actually had in the post changed to new coordinates, yada, yada, yada. But it didn't update in the actual, when you actually go looking for the new corrected cords, it didn't have it. When I went to CGO, it had the corrected cords right then and there. So another fun thing to add for our wonderful new geocaching app.
Yucky.
Yeah, well, it was only 650 feet off, so, I mean, you know.
Yeah, we talked with Nate on the last show, a lot during the show, obviously, and a little bit before and after, and they are still so far from where they thought they would be and where they want to be, but a lot of what they're doing is kind of rethinking everything.
Yes.
And some of that goes back to some of the changes they want to make on the back end of the website as well, and making sure their new app is designed around those changes as well. So it's one of these things. They've got so many balls up in the air, so many pieces moving, that I don't think anything's come together yet, and it's really frustrating.
Yes, for the people that use it.
But it's a bit of a chicken. Thank goodness for the third-party developers.
Yes.
You know, right now, I love my third-party apps. I always have. So I'm not that upset about the official app. I use it for two things: messaging and the Apple Watch support.
There you go.
That's it.
Mm. All right, before we get onto this, because I know where this is going to go. Taz, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome.
I trained 4 muggles on last Thursday. We were at a corporate event. Actually, our group organization event at a sporting club, and it had a geocache right out the back door and another one on a baseball field nearby. So I took 4 of my coworkers on a little expedition and managed to find the first one, and then the one at the baseball field, big fat DNF after about 25 minutes.
It happens. But did you convert any? Are they more interested?
I think I converted at least one of them. So we might give it another try. There is a very cool where I go that's not too far from work, and I might see if I can pull a couple of them out and go do that where I go.
Awesome. Awesome. Nice. Good stuff.
Yeah, and that gives them something else new and exciting. But I think we've learned a new lesson. Podcast hosts should avoid baseball diamond caches.
Yes. That is very true. Couldn't agree more.
Think I've ever found one on the first try at a baseball.
Come to think of it, out of the probably 3 or 4 dozen that I've done like that, I think you hit it on the head there, don't? Stay away. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community and what's coming up this week. Daryl, you got your notes in front of you, or you want me to do this?
Oh, I got it. It's GeoGearheads 224. We're going to be talking with Magnus of project-gc.com again. This is the fourth time we're talking to him, actually. But we've got a lot of cool new stuff to talk about, some stuff from our audience. But the cool thing that we're talking about most is his TB Rescue service after the TBRescue.com went away.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Lots of interest in that.
Yeah, matter of fact, one of the cool prizes that if you went to MOGA 2016 is you got a month subscription to Project GC. So, yeah, I'm going to be using mine, I'll tell you that. Good stuff. Let's see, on the Juice Snippets Reboot podcast, wife Amy and I will be going over the top 100 oldest existing geocaches. And we're going to be going through and hitting some highlights and see if we can just go over and get some people excited about going out into their particular state and come and find it. And, you know, it's starting to become more and more of a almost a challenge these days is for people to actually just do that. I know when we went to Moga, there was one, I thought the oldest Ohio geocache was actually up towards Cleveland, which really got me upset because I drove by it about, 2,000-3,000 times going to Michigan. It was actually down by Cincinnati. So that's where they were going off and going for that. And just that just seems to be popular.
Yeah, I got to get down to the Cincinnati area sometime to do some caching because that's got some really good caching action going on.
Oh, yeah, it's excellent. And even better since Moga's been there. So good, good stuff. All right. Finally, folks, please become a patron to our show. It costs money to do a podcast. Just ask Daryl. He knows this stuff, too. So do us a favor. Throw us a couple bucks each month. Go over onto geocachingpodcast.com and click on our Patreon or our PayPal links and just throw us a couple bucks each month. We would greatly appreciate it. We have thousands of viewers and listeners each and every week and just a relatively few that are helping contribute. To keep us going. So yes, if we have to beg, I will. Just saying it. Send us money. All right, let's move on. We've got episode 447. So let me take you in the Wayback Machine here for a little bit. We're going to go back to, let's see, this would be October 8th, 2014, at episode 372. And that was the last time that we had Daryl W. Four as part of the hosts with the geocaching podcast. Can you believe it's been a year and a half?
Yeah, you know, I can, and it, at some ways it seems like it's much longer.
Does it really? I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, the last year and a half has flown by, and it feels like 3, maybe 4 years.
Yeah. It sometimes does, and when we start, because even with Scott, who loves you, by the way, he gives complete love to you. He was even saying when he came on to the podcast here, he only expected to be on a couple months, help us out, do something like that. Next thing you know, he's on for 2 years, and it's like, where did that go? And I can't even think with me. I think I'm in year 5, year 6 now with the podcast. I mean, because I think I started right around episode 198, 199, something like that.
And you know, you sent the show doc. I saw 447. I'm like, is that all we've done? I could have sworn
we were like in the thousands or something.
Yeah, well, no, I was thinking that we were closer to 10 years with Geocaching Podcast.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. And it's like, because right now that was 75 episodes ago.
Andy, X-Punk X,
yeah,
started this show not that much after I had done Cachemaniacs, and Cachemaniacs is almost 10 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that is something. Absolutely something. So welcome, Daryl. Good to have you on. I thought we'd have, because Daryl's going to help us out. Scott, for the people that have been keeping up with the podcast, Scott is on assignment, a.k.a. he's being Father of the Year, helping with his young ones with T-ball. And you know how that goes when it comes to sports. So there's going to be quite a few episodes where he just can't make it. And Daryl was gracious enough to volunteer to fill in for that. And we love it because I'll be honest, Chad being the Intel guy is like really, you know, he's really smart. But when it comes to technical stuff, we have been lacking. I'm the first to admit it. So. It is good to have the techie guy back. So, Daryl, what you been up to?
Well, talking about the techie stuff, people will undoubtedly remember I do a lot of the events around here with caches that have not been published. They're official caches. They're just not published at the time of the event. And we've always struggled with how to get those onto the smartphones. You know, GPSRs are easy. You bring them up, you load them with, GSAC or GPS Babel, and you're done. But the smartphones are a lot more difficult. Well, this year for the Belle Isle event, we finally put together a reference, and I'm think you're going to put the link in the show notes.
Yes, I will.
For this web stuff that I did, including some actual videos for the iOS guys. Makes it real quick and easy, so it shows you what to do. But the important part was now people could come with the right software, and they didn't have to ask, how do I get in into the geocaching app?
Yep.
And the simple answer is no.
Yes.
And I've been a de facto support individual on that many times on both the Texas Challenge and now out here at the Yolo County Challenge. So dealing with the exact same thing. You've got GPX files and that's it. Go have fun. You know, they can, yeah, they can load it on your GPSRs, but they don't have a clue how to load it for a smartphone app. And so just give me the GPX file. Give me your phone. I'll get it in there for you.
Yeah, and this will help anyone who wants to do one of these events and send out the emails with those files. But the thing to remember, you need to have it in both a zip and in GPX, because there's some apps that don't really like the GPX, and there's a bunch of apps that don't like the zip files. So you really do need to have it both ways. And it's really frustrating with Android, because Android, no two devices seem to be similar. You know, I did all of these instructions off my Nexus 5X. One of the cachers came up with a Nexus 6P. Different manufacturers, but it's the same Google phone generation, you know, same rough software. Theirs would not work right. We had to go through this whole routine of opening it up in the browser. You couldn't just open it up from mail. And we got it to work, but it took us an extra, like, 5 minutes, you know, just... stuff on Android is
because
not
it doesn't
predictable.
Like downloading this file extension or that file extension.
Sure, but we're on the same generation of Google's phones and software. You know, you'd think that it would be the same, but even
trust
Google
me,
can't get it right.
Yeah, I've had a Galaxy S3 on T-Mobile with a Galaxy S3 on Verizon, and we had differences.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane.
Now, how hard is it to actually, is this an actual app that you're using that you just load in the coordinates and it keeps it in there, or does it take a GPX file and convert it? What does it do for the unpublished?
This is just the GPX files saved into the zip file and the GPX file going into an email. That's all we do, because that seems to be the best. And another warning, if you put it like on a web page, we've had problems with doing that before as well. So our trick has been the email with the files attached and Dropbox links, because if they have a Dropbox account, then they can just save it to their Dropbox and then open it up in the app, and that gives them some more stuff,
yeah,
which works really well on Android, I should add.
So that
I've used Dropbox, Google Drive, and email. It's like, one of these is going to work for you.
Exactly. But some of the apps now are specifically supporting Dropbox.
Okay.
So Cachely being one of them on iOS.
Right.
So that was one of the big reasons why you wanted Dropbox specifically, because Dropbox has an API that some of the apps are taking advantage of. But this works with standard third-party apps, like we were mentioning. You know, third-party apps do everything that the official apps don't.
Mm-hmm.
So on Android, it's CGO, CacheSense, and GC Droid. All three of those work. On iOS, it's Cachely, Geocaching with Geosphere, which is still my favorite, even though it's long overdue. Yeah, I haven't gotten an update in a while, but Mark was supposed to be writing it from ground up because the code is not compatible with the current App Store requirements.
Ooh.
It's just so old. You know, he left it for almost 3 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pre-iOS 7. That's how old that code is.
Wow. And it's still my number one. Yeah, it's still my number one that I keep for when I'm doing my driving and I've got my app, you know, mounted to my front windshield, and that's what I run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's my favorite app for caching even now. And Cachely is coming along quite a bit. I'm very happy with what I'm seeing. Even like a month ago, I would not recommend Cashly because it had too many little holes in it. But most of those have been patched. The developer is very responsive. He's spending a lot of time on it. So it's really turning into a great little app. But the other two on iOS are GeoBucket and Looking for Cache Pro. And this is one thing we learned the hard way at the last event, not at Belle Isle, but at the New Year's event. Looking for Cache Standard does not do it. You have to have the Pro. They actually stripped out the support. So kind of annoying. You have to have the paid version to do the unpublished caches.
Yeah.
So is there anything on iOS now that's coming close to the completeness of CGO? Because, you know, I get people that ask me all the time, you know, what can I use for my iPhone? And I don't have a good answer for them.
Yeah, the Cashly is probably the one that I would recommend at this point. It's not, I wouldn't call it as robust as something like CGO, but is much easier and has, I think, a better path that they're going down.
Okay.
So it's nice, pretty easy to use app. The one that has all the power is still Geosphere, but that one makes me nervous. Just it's not been updated in a long time. It can't be updated. It has some glitches that you have to fix through kind of secret handshakes that aren't so secret, but you
literally
know, it's not easy. You have to go and launch. I think it actually shows up in the messages with the link that you have to click, but you have to force some stuff that just, you know, it's not working right because of the changes in the OS. But Geosphere, I still feel, is much more powerful than CGO. However, CGO does do the live maps, and there's nothing on iOS that does the live maps. Actually, that's not true. There are some apps that will do it. I'm just not happy with the performance of, like, Looking for Cache. It's way too slow on the live maps. And there was, like, one or two other ones that did it, and I just don't like the apps enough to recommend them, period.
Well, hopefully somebody will start going with this, and you know, if it takes a rewrite, okay, great. If it's done right, people are willing to wait. But, yeah, I would like to see the iOS pick up on things like that. And it's amazing the durability of CGO on how long it's been around. It's had its ups. It's had its downs. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, that is a go-to, go-for type app. I still use both. If I can't have what I can't find on the Geocaching Classic, I use CGO, so...
Yeah, most of its downs courtesy of changes to the API.
Oh, yeah.
Ground speaking.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Dare, I love this because I remember how long ago, Chad, did we get our Asus watch?
Oh, it's been about a year, maybe a little bit more than a year.
We were so geeked because of the opening up with Google Wear to be able to actually start using our watches for when it came to using geocaches until we actually started using our watches to go geocaching. And those two times were hell on earth.
I've actually done a lot more than that, but I had the original Pebble, I think, while you guys were still looking at those Android Wear devices.
Yep.
And I loved my original Pebble. So I was one of the Kickstart backers for the Pebble Time.
Mm-hmm.
What a pile of junk. I had it replaced twice and finally just said, you know what? I'm done with this. It's driving me insane. There is a really good deal on the Apple Watch over at Best Buy, so I'm going to go grab one. Because among other things, there's two different apps that support geocaching on the Apple Watch, and I want to give them a try so that I can use that while I'm periscoping.
Ooh, there you go.
So I knew the Apple Watch doesn't have a GPS. That's going to be a problem. And it is a problem. But it's not as much a problem as you might think. I still wouldn't use it to actually find the actual caches. But for, like, the periscope stuff, it's great because I can log from the watch.
Right.
And mm-hmm. you know, I can get the cache details, that kind of stuff, real quick. It does have the map, not with the satellite views or anything, so it's not really that useful. But, you know, you get enough information out of there that it does help. especially if you've taken a look at the satellite view on the phone before you start your Periscope and picked out a couple of landmarks. But it's that logging that really is cool, because I've really gotten into the voice dictation for logging, because it does make it so much easier.
Yes.
You know, templates are awesome. Don't get me wrong. I still use the templates all the time on Geosphere. Yeah, but being able to just talk to it and do it, especially when you're doing something like Periscope, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So
I did actually do a video of using the intro app, because that's the one that does it. That's now the regular one. Back, I want to say it was like around Thanksgiving last year. And that's on my YouTube channel. But it was basically a Periscope video that I just took and posted. So it's pretty low res. You know, because we were talking about that earlier. Is you know, Periscope is a really annoyingly low resolution, and it saves that to the camera roll. You know, you don't get even a like 720p. You don't even get a 480. You know, the old like NTSC resolution. We're talking, I want to say it's like 354. So you know, if you're trying to do these little tutorials.
Oh yeah.
It's not so good, but boy, is it fun.
Yeah, because you get it's the nice ability of being live, showing what you need to while you're live, and still have just enough information for people to go, okay, this is cool. You know, this is something that you can show right then and there. It's not even YouTube really made. I mean, it's no. Just enough to, hey, look what I found. Isn't this cool? And have other people come along for the ride.
Yeah, this is you know, out of necessity, low resolution, but it drives me insane because it's not high enough quality that I really feel comfortable posting it on YouTube. You know, if it's great content, fine, but. You know, I don't
want
to post it on YouTube because it looks so bad by comparison.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I use Catch. Are you guys familiar with that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I use Catch to auto-archive all my stuff so that at least it's there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things that bugs me about Periscope is, you know, 24 hours and it's gone. In many cases, yes, I want it to be gone. But, you know, you have some of the stuff that's fun and you want it to stick around. You know, even if it's just, you know, opening those stupid chocolate egg things, you know, I've been doing those yaois.
Yeah. Tell them about yaois, because this is interesting for the.
This is so insanely stupid, but it is addictive. It's fun. It's kind of like a little geocache in an egg, but it's chocolate around a plastic shell, and then in that plastic shell is a little animal,
little toy.
And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like the Kinder Surprise eggs, but on a much more narrow mission. They're all endangered species or one of the six characters that they've created, one of the six yaois. And you know, my nephew found one at 7-Eleven, you know, back around New Year's time for, you know, like 75 cents. It's like, yeah, let's try one, you know. So he opens it up. He's like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then we found them at Walmart, I think it was, after that, a little more expensive. But, you know, it's like, let's just do it. It's fun. And now we're hooked on, you know, we get the whole Periscope of it. People are talking about it.
Well, they got names. So, they got all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's silly, but, you know, it's just entertaining in one of those low quality kind of ways.
It's usually good after your fifth or sixth beer. I'm just saying. That's just when they really get funny.
So, yeah, we've been doing a few of those, and now even when I'm doing my geocaching Periscopes, I'm getting heckled to do yaois.
Now, you had, like, what, six of them out there? I hope they've got a whole collection. Is that the whole set?
There's six different characters, but there's, like, 30 endangered animals, I think.
Wow.
And then, like, the six yaoi characters. So there's, like, 36 different little character. So of course now we're hooked and we're collecting all these things. And at this point we only have two of them that are duplicates, and those are kangaroos. But we're going to call them wallabies.
You know, you're going to end up getting a whole collector's case for this thing, aren't you?
I hope not, but I'm not ruling anything out because we're just a little too hooked on these things.
Oh, that's
funny. And they're just silly little plastic toys.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, well, you never know. It's whatever, something attracts people and they love it. Now, the one thing I did want to know with Apple Watch, and I know Chad had actually gotten down to the code level, I think, with CGO, wasn't it, Chad? Where we were trying to figure out the time differential between where the GPS said where you're at and the direction and distance that you're supposed to be going, and that trying to pull it from the app itself was causing all sorts of craziness with that. Was that something like correct, Chad?
Yeah. Basically, the Android Wear watch doesn't have GPS in it as well, so it was pulling the GPS information through the CGO app, which is rather latent information, and something along with that was screwing with the directionality that it was telling you to try to go, because the Android Wear's compass is actually very good. It's dead spot on, but when you're trying to use the compass mode for with a CGO app on your Android Wear watch, you know, your compass is just spinning.
Yes, literally.
Yeah, and this is a problem that you're always going to have if your GPS and your compass is not tied in together. You know, imagine sitting there with the watch, and your phone is sitting in its in your pocket. How's it going to tell where it is and which way your wrist is pointing? And you know, the compass on the watch really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because if I'm holding the watch at like 90 degrees versus like 120 degrees, it does make a little difference as to which way you should be going.
Yeah, it needs a way to basically say what direction do I need to project to from where I'm currently located, right, based upon my current GPS coordinates. Send that information to the watch, and the watch just do an offset from that based upon what its known compass orientation is. And if you have that, you should be golden, but that doesn't seem to be the way that they're actually implementing it.
Yeah, well, and there are some of the Android Wear watches that actually have the GPS.
Right, some of the newer ones.
Yeah, well, even some of the older ones had it.
There was one or two of the second generation that had it, but more of the third generation beyond have it.
Yeah, it's something that's becoming standard slowly, and a lot of that goes back to the big market for these watches has been the fitness market, and in most cases, the fitness people who are really spending the money don't want to have to take their phone with them when they go for their jog or their run. They'd rather have just the watch, even if it's not connected to the internet. They want to be able to record their runs, kind of like you used to do with the old Forerunner watches. Mm-hmm. And they want to be able to listen to their music and whatnot. And when they get back to the phone or to an internet connection or whatever, just have it sync that run data back to, you know, the Runkeeper or MyFitnessPal or whatever app they're using. So that's what's driving it, is that's a feature that will sell into that market where people are actually spending the big bucks for watches.
Yeah.
Watches, like, you know, the $10,000 Apple Watch.
Yeah, those are nice, I've heard. I just want my
they're same old watch with different accessories.
Yeah, I know it, but they're shiny. I just want my Dick Tracy watch to work before I die. That's all I want. Is that asking too much? I'm just saying.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. I was surprised. If not this year, but next year, we actually see a camera in the Apple Watch, which I'm not looking forward to.
Mm.
But my guess is it's going to be that front-facing camera so that Scott Burks can do his Dick Tracy thing, and it'll actually sell one to him.
Yes. And the problem is, what is it with smartwatches nowadays? They don't even allow the watches that we have now into courtrooms and things like that. You imagine when they start really coming out full blast with the camera and the whole shot. So, yeah. Makes it interesting. Back to Periscope for just a second. When we were talking before about the resolution with Periscope, what do you see, Daryl, between that and the Facebook Live because I've seen one person use Facebook Live, and I didn't get a chance to really see good, bad, or indifferent.
I have not had a chance to use Facebook Live myself. I don't really have a Facebook account.
But, oh, that's right. Silly me, I forgot.
But it has been the talk on a lot of the tech shows and everything. And what I'm hearing is almost universally, people are like, yeah, it's basically Periscope. The thing that's nice with Facebook is it does record a higher quality version that you can upload to replace the low quality stream version.
Ah.
So any of those glitches or whatnot, when it's saving it, you know, because Facebook Live doesn't have the it's going away after 24 hours thing, it stays there. So when you post it from the or when you live stream it from the phone, you know, you might have those glitches and dropouts like we're used to with Periscope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was doing Belle Isle, apparently it was so bad that people could only get like one word out of every paragraph, essentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can take the file that it saves to the phone, upload it at higher res, and it's going to be better quality audio, the whole deal. So that is a big thing with Periscope. But overall, people are not really happy with the Facebook Live. What I want to know is if that's going to change after the BuzzFeed wrapping a watermelon with rubber bands incident. Because now everyone's talking about it. It's such a stupid video, but it was like insane numbers, and it got everyone on social media talking about that.
So you think it's going to make them want to do more wonderful quality videos?
Awareness.
Ah, okay.
And that's been the whole thing, is people are saying that the Facebook Live doesn't get the interaction, doesn't get the viewers. You know, Periscope is pulling in numbers and giving you the interaction that Facebook Live does not. So the people who are doing Periscope aren't motivated to switch.
Yeah. And I think also with the Facebook Live, you are cut down so dramatically with the amount of views that you can have behind Facebook's financial model. So in other words, if you put something out, you only have a small percentage that actually goes to the people who quote unquote like you. Otherwise, you have to boost it for a nominal fee to actually get out to more of the numbers. And I can see that being a major drawback for people as well. It's like, well, you can see your videos, but if you pay us X more, we'll let more people see your videos, as opposed to with Periscope, anybody who's got a Twitter account basically can hook in and away you go.
Yeah. For now, my understanding is they're kind of suspending that, and anyone who does live videos, it's you know, the Facebook Live stuff.
Yeah,
it's going out to all of their followers.
Ah, okay.
And they're trying to push the feature and get it juiced.
Ah, gotcha.
And even then, the people who are doing it are not seeing the numbers, and they're not seeing the interaction. And the big thing with Periscope has been that interaction. People love getting the hearts. They love talking to the little bubbles that come up on screen.
Yep.
So if they don't get that, you know, there has to be something big that Live is going to do for them that Periscope does not.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's face it, most of the Periscope videos aren't the kind of videos that you really want to save.
It really isn't. It's like, yeah, here's my, you know, 45-second, minute and a half type thing of, I thought this was cool, you might be interested in, have a look at it and go from there.
Yeah, and it's the people, you know, going from here to there, you know, doing bike rides. I've seen some of those videos pop up. Kayaking, you know, do some of that. There was tons of the man in the tree Periscopes out there. Yeah, and stuff like that. And you know, one of the more interesting ones was the puddle cam.
The puddle cam?
It was somewhere in the UK. And I think it went on for like 2 weeks.
Oh, boy.
You know, they obviously had the phone plugged in on the Wi-Fi in the building. I think it was a school office or something, and
right,
it was pointed down at the school's puddle in front of their building. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that gets some of those long views. And this, you know, this is what we would have done with webcams 10 years ago. But now it's instant and it's anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of changed. Plus, it's two-way. Webcams were, at the time, one way.
Yes, it's interactive, which makes it all that much more fun. And it's, you know, even today with the Periscopes that I was doing, it's like, hey, from the Netherlands, hey, from Ireland, hey, from the UK, hey, from, you know, Montana, whatever. It's awesome to be able. Matter of fact, one of the fathers was actually trying to explain to his son, he's in America and we're seeing this now live. And, you know, how technology has changed. That is something. Yeah,
good.
It is really good. All right, let's see. Why don't we finish up with a couple other things? Because you did some stuff, and I thought this was cool. The first 360 geocache hunt with the Theta S. Did we just lose Daryl? Uh-oh. He was here a second ago. We'll give him a minute. So, Chad, when you went out with Periscope, have you had much? How's the followings gone for you now?
I've really only done one Periscope.
Really, one?
One, and that was at the Star Wars opening day. And after my wife figured out that I was live on the internet and people were watching us, I got the shut it down.
See, that happened with me when I did the infamous French toast parties for winter, was because we would do that. And wife Amy, who is used to being on a camera, we would go through and she's like, you know, you're on your own. Go do it. If you're going to do this, go do it. But you are on your own.
Yeah, but I need to get out there and actually do some Periscopes of geocaches. And I know there's some cool geocaches around here that I want to go back to. One's a Travel Bug Hotel, and I want to Periscope that Travel Bug Hotel because it's such a friggin' awesome Travel Bug Hotel.
Yeah, and a lot of me, if you figure most of the Periscopes that are out there really don't show the high, you know, the high terrain, the high difficulty, the extra work that somebody went into something like that. It's usually your parking grabs that go through and go for the 2 seconds. But the cool thing is, even with a simple parking grab, the people in Europe, if you're showing a standard skirt hide, they don't know what that is. They don't have those the same way. And they're like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool until you've seen a thousand of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, exactly. But it's every part of the country's got its own unique thing. And I love with Periscope how when you start getting enough people that you want to watch, and if it's not going to drive you nuts with that whistle, you do get to have perspective of different parts of the world when they're out doing. So somebody might be up in the ice in the winter up in Quebec. You know, somebody's down in Arizona in the deserts. And it's just neat to see the terrain differences when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, and it's fun to watch the guys over in the UK while you're eating breakfast as they're hunting for caches.
Yes. Yeah, even the time difference in that. That's awesome.
Walking around the fields in their galoshes.
Yes, or falling in, Mark.
Or just falling out of.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. And I the part that I really wanted to see with Periscope, and with any of the ones, because let's face it, for all three of us gentlemen here, we're used to doing live broadcasts. So for people who are not, haven't taken that leap into the live world and now are actually videoing themselves live, that's quite a jump for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people stay clear of it just because they're nervous about doing the whole live thing.
Wow, that's something. I mean, once you, and I'll give this a note to anybody that wants to consider doing live broadcasting. Once you do your first faceplant, it's awesome. You're used to it, and away you keep going. It's just how it is with live.
So your advice is basically what we used to tell people in high school: get your first glitch out of the way, you know, intentionally.
Yes.
Make a glitch on your video.
Yes. So you can move on.
And you can move on.
Yes, because once you say what you say or do what you do, you can't undo it, and away you go. It's how you bounce off. Yep. Mm-mm. So, Daryl, tell us, we've got a little bit more time here with the Theta S. This is exciting stuff, but I think we've got a ways to go with this.
Oh, absolutely. But we're almost there. And the Theta S is just a 360 camera. I got it because, as you remember, when I left the show, one of the big things that I was hot on were the photospheres.
Oh, yeah.
You take the camera you know, on your cell phone, you just run it around and you get the whole thing. You know, up, down, left, right, you know, 360 in every direction, and you can pan around it like you were there. The problem with the cameras on the phone is it has to stitch that, and inevitably there's going to be some flaws. So when you've got the camera that's built for it, you reduce the flaws because it knows its attributes and it stitches to the specs of that camera. So I got the Theta S for doing stills, but it's also a 1080 camera that does video, you know, 1080p camera.
Mm-hmm.
So I did play with it. I did my first 360, posted that to YouTube, and it is a learning curve to figure out how to do that. But it's not quite the quality I'd like to see. And my whole thought with the 360 videos for geocaching is I want the camera, like, behind my shoulder so that you feel like you're along as part of the group for a hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can pan your view around up, down, left, right, any way you want, and look at anything you want. So if you're out in front as the cameraman, essentially, you expect a little bit more control than if you're part of the group. And it feels a little bit weird, because I've seen some of the videos that have done that, where you are the cameraman without control. And it feels very strange. So my thought is, you know, just kind of put it over the shoulder, you know, get the view as if you're part of the group, just tagging along, trying to, you know, find it with me. And if you go back and look at that video, it's kind of depressing at the quality.
Yeah, it's low res.
Yeah, by the time it's stitched, that, you know, 360 degree by 360 degree image is actually only about 960 something pixels, mm-hmm. not 1080, because it takes those two spherical fisheye lenses that the Theta S has and has to stitch them together and create one big wide full frame image.
Right.
That is your full 360 instead of these two, I think it's 182 degree images. You know, it's a little bit wider than 180, you know, so that it's kind of looking behind itself. And then that overlap is removed.
Okay.
And stitched together. Hence why, part of why, you lose some of the resolution. Then when you put it into the viewer, it loses even more resolution because you're zooming in on that to get what is your normal field of view.
Right.
So when you're done, you're getting something that's about the resolution of Periscope, but because of all of the stitching and everything, it's not as high quality.
Now, with something like this, is it better than to view 360 video? Obviously, not necessarily on YouTube or any. Is it better just to have it on your TV at home so you can fully appreciate it? Does it work better on a large screen for something like that, or because you've got less, you know, go-tos to get the actual video the way they want it? Because a lot of times they cut res down. Is that usually the better thing to do? Is it ever going to work on social media?
Well, I don't think you're going to see anything really going to the television in this fashion, because it's too hard to control your view on a television. You can't, you know, pan the television around. You could sit there with
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Which but, as a consumer, that's what I want to do. You know, I've looked at that video
or something.
And, you know, yeah. I'm looking around trying to see where you're looking, trying to see where, look at the partner you had there with you, look at the tree. It's like, it's 20 feet in here. It's like I'm quickly trying to pan to look to see if I can find it.
Well, and that actually is a different problem that we want to touch on again. But, you know, you can do it on the television. However, it's so low res, it's going to be disorienting. And when you have something on a big image like that, it is going to tend to make people a little bit more seasick. So the thing it really is like the Google Cardboard viewers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like ViewMaster has a nice cheap plastic one. And to make it even worse, a lot of food packaging is now coming with Google Cardboard. Down in Australia, really? I think it was the Big Mac, you know, the McDonald's Big Mac, mm-hmm. actually was packaged in a cardboard packaging so that you'd take it apart, put it together with the lenses that came into the little pouch, and now you have a Google Cardboard so you can do VR.
Oh, my God.
One of the European papers, it might have been The Guardian, but that doesn't sound right, actually shipped fold-up cardboard with one of their weekly papers. And here I just got a flyer in the mail, Kellogg on Pop-Tarts, on a few of their other packages of cereal, if I want to say Frosted Flakes, but only at Walmart. They're going to be doing the included Google Cardboard viewers as part of the promotion for the new Avengers movie.
Wow.
Okay, I'll have to check that out because I still haven't got one for my Galaxy 6S. So,
I need
some cardboard.
Yeah, cardboard is cheap. It's easy. It works with most devices. It's a great place to start and to do things like view these videos. I've got a Flappy Birds clone and a Crossing Words clone that works with cardboard. I hate it. It is terrible, but it's cool to see in 3D. But what we're talking about with these videos isn't the 3D. It's still just the one point of view.
Yeah.
So it can't really do the 3D. There is some tech that's coming that is simulating 3D, but that's not this. This is too flat. It doesn't have the resolution. And if you do view it even like in cardboard, it really breaks down even further, so it isn't very good.
But you're getting the panning effect, right?
You get to look around. It is really interesting to see from this what your promise is going to be. And as soon as I saw that first 360 video that I put up there, it's like, okay, now I understand why you need the 4K, and Nikon has a 4K action camera coming. Mm-hmm. There are some solutions right now that you can do that for under $1,000, but it's not cheap. And then, you know, people are putting at the F8 Facebook conference this week, they just announced this open source platform. It's still a $30,000 build to put one of these things together. So there's all of these different systems.
Yeah.
But all of them cost a lot of money if it's going to have good quality.
Oh, yeah, it has to. Right. What size files are we talking when we're actually making a 360 video?
Well, it's just standard video coming from like the Theta S. So it's not small because it is 1080p video, but it's not that large. Hmm. It's very manageable. Theta S has the Wi-Fi to connect to the camera, and you can transfer the files back and forth. Anything over about a minute worth of recording, I tend not to try to transfer because it errors out too frequently.
Ah.
You have to really do that on the cable. Hopefully that's something they'll fix, but direct Wi-Fi connections aren't all that stable. So yeah. Well, that's really what's going on there.
It's interesting how they're going now where we're actually kind of going backwards to the old Zoom or Doom video games. I remember way back when they first started to come out with the 3D type things where you had Castle Wolfenstein and some of the other ones that were out with that. People could not play them because there's that influx of control and speed of the spin with that and just getting sick. And I could see this happening with these guys just for like you were saying before, Daryl.
Yeah. So this is a technology that's developing. We have really good, affordable, not cheap, but affordable products coming. So if someone really wants to get on the 360 YouTube thing, I think that, we haven't actually seen one yet, so I don't know for sure, but I think that action camera from Nikon is the right answer. And I could see a lot of people doing that where you just mount it to your helmet and get the whole 360 while you're doing all sorts of things because it is the 4K and it's going to give you that resolution. So I really do have a lot of hope for this in the future. Yeah, I'm kind of a little, you know, I really wanted the still stuff,
mm-hmm.
but now that I've got this, it's like the video is so cool and it really does look like it will deliver on that promise of what I was hoping for with the more immersive videos and giving people a chance to look around. But like Chad, you were talking earlier about, you know, oh, I said it was 20 feet over here in this tree. And I was describing specifically to try to get people to look over there to see it. But on the video, I had to be almost right up on top of it before you actually saw it.
Hmm.
Because it's just not high enough resolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a geocache. It's low contrast. You need the detail, in most cases, to pick it out.
Right.
Now, sometimes it's going to be high enough contrast, but not usually. So, you know, it's something I have to play with a lot more. I was hoping to do that more even today, but, you know, it's life. We don't have time to play with our toys as much as we'd like.
This is so true. And it isn't bad enough that we've got those daredevils out there riding on a knife blade edge, you know, a mile and a half up on a cliff and wanting to throw up. Now having something like this where you can look in any given direction. Thanks, guys. Just appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I kind of hope what they're going to do is, at least initially, more of the spectator stuff. You know, the Theta S is a small camera. It actually takes less space overall than like a GoPro, but it's not to be mounted like a GoPro. So hopefully people won't do it. Yeah. But the Nikon is meant to be mounted like a GoPro. It's an action cam. So we're definitely going to see a lot of that stuff on the bikes and whatnot. But if you're on the bike, I don't want to be looking around side to side and behind you. You know, it's just
it's going to make for some interesting video, that's for sure. All right, so why don't we kind of wrap this up for tonight, Daryl? How can people get in touch with you? I know you're going to be on for several other shows that we're going to have, but so that people know where they can get in touch with you and see other further adventures of Daryl W. Four.
Well, you can always check out my Periscope and Twitter feeds at DarylW4. Of course, at geocaching.com at DarylW4. I'm always on the GeoGearheads. I shouldn't say always. I think I missed two episodes so far. But I'm on the GeoGearheads most of the time. So you can always check out those shows and have links in most of those to various things as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for stopping on by, and we're going to have Daryl on quite a bit over the next month and a half, and I know this is driving Scott nuts because you know how much he loves ribbing you, and it's like, you know, we get all the fun.
We'll have to find at least one more show after Scott comes back.
Yes.
Where I can be abused.
He's got so much pent up things, it's ridiculous.
He doesn't get enough of it when he's on my shows.
And also in memoriam for Mr. Scott, I do have to do this at least one show. It's in the contract. So all right, let's move on. And thank you again, Daryl. Thank you, Chad. And let's do this thing. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.